1300 and 98.7.
Now, the most live local talk with the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show.
Good morning, Capital District, and welcome to the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. I'm your host, Daniel Rubin. I'm here in the studio with Jay Gervin. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Good morning, Daniel. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I haven't done this show with you in about a year, I think.
I know. Well, you know, we had the attorney's lunch yesterday. When you started crying, I said, okay, I'll come in today.
The fans miss you, Jay. You know, that's what I know.
Yeah, it's, I have, you know, sometimes I have very long weeks, and it's Saturday. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, oh, thanks, Sal. But I like doing it. It's just sometimes I've got other stuff going on, and every once in a while we do training for some of our employer clients on Saturday, so that's also a conflict, which is very relevant now, Daniel. These days, with all the stuff going on nationally, in the last 2 weeks, I've done training for 4 different employers on hostile work environment and sexual harassment in the workplace and discrimination matters. And, you know, folks out there, none of that conduct's ever been acceptable. But to think now that you're not under a magnifying glass, you know, if you don't think so, yes, people are. And these days, with audio, video equipment and things of that nature, in more than 50% of the cases that I'm involved with, there is some kind of audio, video evidence.
You should assume what you're doing is being recorded these days,
right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute, but I want to give the folks out there the number, Jay, 518-476-1300. And I also want to tell one of my favorite Jay Gervin stories, because you were talking about working too much. Ryan Malay from our office told me, Jay works so hard that I called him once while he was on vacation. I said, hey, Jay, how you doing? He said, I'm good. I'm at the beach. And he said, and Ryan said, that's all right. I just wanted to ask you a question about this particular file. And you said, oh, no problem. I got the file right here with me. That's dedication.
Yeah,
that's dedication, folks.
Well, you can't tell our clients that we're available 24/7 unless we're really available 24/7, right? So, and most of the time it's, look, I tell people, you can call me up to midnight because I'm up till midnight pretty much every day. And most people don't, but if you get a call after 9 o'clock at night, you know it's something very important to that person.
That's so right.
So and you're the same way, Daniel, and so is Ryan. You know, the whole office is that way. So it's something that, that's part of our culture, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things we do is to help our clients see around corners, and when they don't see what's coming and they're worried about it, we help put them at ease and let them know, you know what, this is the path that we're gonna take to get around this or to make it better or to make the best of a worse situation. And when you were talking earlier about harassment training, you know, employers out there have probably let the training go too long in a lot of cases. They haven't done it in a number of years. It's not part of their regular culture. Now, as you say, it's in the media. It's something that is prevalent. People are making complaints more than ever, which is a good thing. But what employers may not realize is that by doing those regular trainings, by allowing someone like us to come in and set up a policy and put training into that policy, they can actually protect themselves from liability.
Well, and the issue, and you're right, in the dialogue regularly at the workplace is, hey, we had this training last year. We had this training 2 years ago. We know that stuff. And sometimes the crowd, you know, you try to make it interactive with them, but you should be doing it regularly because you don't want to be on the receiving end of somebody at one of the state agencies, an arbitrator, a hearing officer, or a judge saying, wait a minute, when's the last time you did this? 3 years ago? And by the way, you have 33 new employees.
Right.
You know, so the fact that hopefully it is resounding and the people understand that and it's an annual event, that's okay though, that you're saying to somebody who's looking at you from afar, we're not behind the eight ball. We're in front of the eight ball because we do regular training.
Yeah, and again, number in here in the studio is 518-476-1300. This is a call-in radio show. We are here to take your calls. If you've got a question about the law, maybe something involved in your own life, something that you've seen in the news, something you want to talk about generally, we're happy to talk about that. It doesn't have to be the discussion, the topic that we're on, but again, 518-476-1300. And you know, Jay, there's two ways that the conversation goes when you get to court, right? It's, I had no idea that this was going on, okay? And nobody complained to me. Okay, Sure. But what did you do to let your employees know that they could complain?
Right.
That this is the process for complaining, that there are multiple avenues to complain. You know, it's one thing to sit in the courtroom and say, I never heard anything about it. It's another to say, not only did I not hear anything about it, every year I put all of my employees through a training where I explicitly told them how they could make a complaint, that if the person that we listed as the person to complain to is the person that's harassing you, that you can go a different way, that
right.
you can submit a complaint in this way. Right. I gave them a piece of paper in writing, which they signed and acknowledged that they received, which told them all of these things.
Right.
You know, and I kept those policies updated, and I kept my employees updated on those policies. I also trained my managers to spot and report
and
these incidents
right.
and intervene.
Right.
You know, so that's the conversation that you want to have when you get to court.
Exactly. And if it's not, and I agree wholeheartedly that, look, your policy doesn't say here's the people you can report to, but you can report to anyone. We have an
exactly.
open door. Not only could you report, the training is you should report.
You should.
If this disrupts and distracts and interferes and in some way is paralyzing or impacting on the person's ability or day-to-day activities, yes, report it. And then you emphasize, we're going to maintain the confidential nature of this to the best extent possible. You know, you may have to report it up the chain of command, but we're not going to broadcast this out. We're not going to call a staff meeting.
Right.
We're going to deal with this. The law says this, Daniel, and you know this. If you're put on notice as an employer of a problem, you have to investigate it. If you determine that there is a problem, you have to take corrective action. There's no formula from the law that says here's the corrective action. This one's okay. This is a don't
right.
do it again oral counseling, or this one's a suspension, or this one's a reassignment. It depends on the facts of each situation. But the law says the employer is obligated on notice to take corrective action. So even if a person doesn't report it, if you're a supervisor and you see conduct which is not proper conduct, you have to intervene.
Right.
Right.
And if you don't know what the proper course of intervention is, pick up the phone. Call us. We're there. We'll answer that call. You'll get the information that you need in a few minutes, and we'll tell you exactly the steps that you need to take to protect yourselves. And again, you know, we talk about liability because we're lawyers, and that's what we see when we look at the world. That's the filter that we view the world in. But the reality also is that no employer wants any of their employees to unnecessarily suffer through something like this.
Correct. I mean, you know, I'm fortunate to work with employers across the state, and they're all trying to do the right thing. You know, I mean, that look, we're in the business, public, private, not for profit. This is our goal. This is. And our objectives, let's work as a cohesive unit to try and address those goals and objectives. So, you know, the employers do want a workplace, or should want a workplace,
right.
which is open, fair, and something that people are not being embarrassed, threatened, intimidated, harassed.
Yeah, you know, this goes for all legal advice, really, and it came from my brother, who's a doctor. You know, I called him one day and I was telling him, you know, I was having this thing. Do you think I should go see the doctor? And his advice to me was, Daniel, if you're calling me to ask whether you should go to the doctor and you're that worried, you should go to the doctor. It's the same thing in this kind of situation. If you are concerned about what's happening to you as an employer, or you're an employee, or you're an employer who sees something, or a manager who sees something that concerns you enough to think twice about it, you know, it's always a good thing to report it and get it corrected, or find out that it's not something that is a problem.
And we always say to the employers, you're better off doing the training that you've been talking about, Daniel, putting people on notice, you know, drafting and revising your policies, because you're better to address this upstream than after the fact. You know, again, you want to be proactive, not reactive as an employer.
Yeah, so this is the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. Jay Gervin and I are talking about employment harassment, discrimination, and the steps that employers can take to protect themselves from liability. But you don't have to talk to us about that. We're happy to talk about any subject here today. 518-476-1300 is the number in the studio. And I understand we have a first caller on the line.
We have Mark from Latham.
Good morning, Mark from Latham. How are you?
Okay, how are you guys today?
Good. How can we help?
I'm not quite sure how this probate system works. Now, I understand that you go to a surrogate's court and you have to put in paperwork to have someone named as executor from the will, if it was just a simple will. And what happens to the assets of that deceased person in between the time that they leave this world and the time that the executor gets named by the surrogate's court, particularly in regard to mortgage payments on a house that they owned?
That's a great question, actually. It's one of the reasons why you want to get the process started quickly is you don't want that property to go into default because there's no one making those payments. You know, you don't need to give me any specifics, but how? What are we talking about in terms of assets? Is there more than just some bank accounts and some real property?
There's a house and a car. Yeah,
a house and a car, and any bank accounts or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
In the house, was it titled only in the deceased person's name, or was there someone else on the deed?
Right, okay. But he had it set up so that the payments on the mortgage were automatically deducted from his checking account at the bank that holds the note on the mortgage.
And is there enough cash in there at the moment to keep that going?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you want to get in and get it set up immediately so that somebody can take over, and eventually you're going to want to deal with that property, whether it's to sell it or transfer it to one of the potential distributees. And you have a will in this case?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and so does it list the executor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and that person is willing to serve?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it should be a straightforward process. The only way that this process is really going to get derailed or become complicated is if somebody challenges that will, or if there are assets which aren't listed or they're improperly described or something like that. But this should be a fairly straightforward process for you. It's something that you can certainly hire an attorney to help you with. But I don't think, Jay, this guy's going to have a lot of problems in this situation.
Well, and again, because the immediate thing you want to do is have the executor appointed through court so that the executor can then access the bank account to pay the mortgage payments on the house, which will be a big piece of the estate. If there's a challenge on who is going to get the house, whether it's a single person or multiple people, that's separate and distinct from making sure the house
right. remains
part of the estate.
Current.
Yeah, I don't anticipate any challenges. I guess what my concerns are is that the surrogate court said it would take 6 to 8 weeks to name or to do the document that names the executor. So I'm like, all right, who's going to pay for the mortgage in that time point and that during that time? And secondly, there's a alternate executor in the will. Does that alternate executor are they informed, or does the court do that, or who does that?
Well, the alternate executors would only take place if the primary executor was not available, predeceased, or said he or she did not want to serve as the executor. That's
right.
That's just in drafting a will. Okay, I'm going to appoint Daniel as my executor. But if he's not available or whatever, refuses, then Gideon will be the alternate. Gideon would only step in if Daniel was not available, predeceased, or says no.
But does the alternate executor need to know, that the will person is deceased, or who tells them that if they need to know?
If they need to know, the court will tell you who to put on notice. And when you do, also if there are creditors of the estate, you're to put them on notice as well before the estate gets settled. That's all part of the probate process.
Yeah.
As far as paying the mortgage, if you're really, truly concerned about it, if the automatic debits have stopped, you may want to write a letter to the mortgage company explaining that you're in the process of getting things set up and that, you know, any payments will be forthcoming. But 6 to 8 weeks, is much shorter than the process for actually foreclosing on a mortgage. So I think that's unlikely to occur. But again, if you're concerned about it, I think you could do that. Just let them know what happened, that you're moving forward, and that things will get straightened out.
And a lot of times, Mark, what happens in a family situation prior to the death, there's a joint account as opposed to just the exclusive account at the bank, and when somebody deceases, there's still a joint account. Or secondly, because there's no argument or dispute as to how things are going to be distributed, the family may say, okay, let's pay the mortgage ourselves. You know, Daniel and I are brothers, we'll take care of this, and but that ultimately is coming out of the estate once the bank account is freed up. But you know, with, that's just practical ways that people have addressed it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of things that you can do before the, someone passes away to make this process easier. For example, in some cases where you have a close-knit family, you might have the father or a mother or the parents transfer the property to the children's name and reserve a life estate. Or they may name the person that they want to have the house as a joint tenant so that when they pass that the transfer occurs automatically. There are a lot of ways to deal with things. Same things with bank accounts. You can set up those bank accounts so that upon death they transfer automatically to somebody and make this process a little easier. It's all sort of what somebody, a probate attorney, or a trust and estate attorney will walk you through and help plan for the eventual death of someone so that all of this kind of happens as seamlessly as possible. And I think a lot of people are intimidated about going to see a trust and estates attorney, but realistically, if you look at how much time and money they can save you and how much they can put you at ease about the process, it's definitely worth every penny.
Mm-hmm. And what are you supposed to do with the death certificates when you get a whole bunch of them? Are you supposed to send them out to credit card companies and that type of thing, or...
That I don't know the answer to. So Jay and I don't practice trust in estates, so that's the disclaimer here. But that's something that if you want to send one of us an email, we can figure that out for you, and I'll give you my email address, Mark.
Okay, sounds good.
It's dsr@gervinlaw.com.
Great.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much, Donald.
All right, Mark,
you're
welcome. Have a great day.
Have a great day.
Yeah, folks, you can, Gervin and Filazzo, we're at 20 Corporate Woods Boulevard, which is right off of I-90. Our number during the week is 518-462-0300, and our email is gervinlaw.com. You can put attorney@gervinlaw.com. If you know the respective initials of the attorney you're trying to contact, it's the initials at gervinlaw.com. My initials would be J-E-G. Gervin@gervinlaw.com. Gervin, by the way, is G-I-R-V as in Victor, I-N. So oftentimes people confuse us with George Gervin, which was G-E-R, but he was the Iceman in the NBA, and he shot a little better than me.
Jay Gervin often confuses himself with the Iceman in the NBA around the water cooler at the office.
He was the guy, George.
Again, the number here in the studio, 518-476-1300. This is a call-in legal show. We are here to answer your questions. It can be a question you have about the law generally, maybe a case that you're involved in or thinking about bringing. We're happy to discuss it. A little bit of background on the firm. Gervin and Filazzo has been around for over 25 years now, and we are serving clients throughout the Capital District in a wide variety of areas. We have a large labor and employment practice, municipal law practice. We represent a number of educational institutions. We have a corporate and business transactions process, civil litigation, personal injury, medical malpractice, in real estate. And if we don't know the answer, we'll at least be able to point you in the right direction. So, Jay, we were talking a little bit about some of the things that employers can do to protect themselves earlier. And, you know, there's another side to this coin, which we'll get to in just a minute, which is what can employees do in the event that they feel that they've been harassed. So let's go first to Kathy in Albany. Good morning, Kathy.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Good, good. Listen to you guys almost every week.
Oh, wonderful.
I hope we're keeping you awake. Well, yeah, I guess, or something like that. I've got a question. It's not to this point yet, but
sure.
I'm hoping it doesn't get to a point.
Okay.
I received a bill from a hospital's outsourced billing department.
Okay.
Okay. It already has been paid by my health insurance company.
Okay.
It looks like a double billing situation.
Okay.
I called my health insurance. They looked it up and said, oh, yeah, we denied that claim because we already covered it under another submittal.
Okay.
So you shouldn't have to be paying that. I said, okay, fine. So I threw it away. Well, then they sent me another one. I'm like, oh, come on, guys. So I called my health insurance again. They said, well, what's going on? You know, they called, okay, we'll call you back. No, it should be okay. Well, my question is, apparently the outsourced company referred it back to the hospital. And what my question is, okay, my health insurance is supposedly working on the deal, but if they keep sending me a bill, I don't want a collection agency after me for something that basically has already been covered.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you called the hospital itself?
If you call the hospital, they refer you to the outpatient billing department.
All right. So, because I just dealt with this in another situation, and I finally got through to the hospital or the outsourcing billing department, whatever the case may be. And I was calling on behalf of an individual as opposed, similar to your situation. They said, well, this is between us and the insurance company. And tell your client, don't worry, there's no issues there. So, you know,
that's basically the same question. That's the same answer I've been getting. Yeah.
If you really want to be proactive and just to create a record, what you might do is take a copy of the receipt from your own health insurance company showing that it's been paid. Put it in the envelope back to the company where they requested payment and put a letter in there that says, to so-and-so, this has already been paid. Please note that, no further payment is forthcoming. And you could send that registered or return receipt request.
But you don't have anything in writing saying it's been paid.
No, I don't.
Right. See, you just have your insurance company is telling the hospital or the outpatient service it's been already taken care of.
I see. I thought
they're confirming that to you on the telephone.
Exactly.
So if you want to do the approach Daniel's talking about, you could send an email or a letter back to the outsourcing billing department through the hospital, say this will confirm our conversation of February 3rd, in which you acknowledge the fact that this has been resolved and or it's a matter between the outsourcing company and my health insurance, and I have no personal liability.
Right.
You could do it that way.
When I got the bill the first time, right, I called them and said, and it says, no insurance on file. And I'm thinking, what?
Right.
So I called them and I said, didn't you submit that to my insurance company? Because that's what it's supposed to do. And they said, well, we don't have any insurance on file. And I'm like, yeah, you do. You should.
Right.
So anyway, so then I said, all right, let's go around the other way and call the insurance company. And they looked it up and said, no, you shouldn't have got that bill. It was already covered.
So I think you could take a breath because I just dealt with this. But as Daniel's indicating, if you want that additional security, send the letter or the email back confirming the conversation they have with you telling you you are all set. All right. So Kathy,
thanks,
we're going to break for the news, but thank you so much. Folks, we're going to break for the half-hour news. This is Jay Gervin here with Dan Rubin. We'll be back after the news break.
This is WGDJ, Rensselaer, and W254DA, Albany, the Capital District's talk radio on Talk 1300 and 98.7 FM. Now, the most live, local talk with the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show.
Good morning, Capital District, and welcome back to the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. I'm your host, Daniel Rubin. I'm here with my co-host and mentor, Jay Gervin. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Daniel. How you doing?
Doing great. Always good to be here. Always good to be here with you, one of the founding members of the firm. And we're here to take calls from the public. We want to answer any questions we can that you're thinking about the law. Maybe it's a case in your own life. Maybe it's something you saw in the news. Maybe it's just a burning question you've always had about how the law works. Give us a call here in the studio, 518-476-1300. That's 518-476-1300. Jay, before the break, we've been talking a little bit today about employment discrimination. We had talked quite a bit about things that employers can do in order to prevent liability and potential harassment suits and to prevent their employees from suffering unnecessarily through harassment or discrimination. And obviously the flip side to that coin is, what about employees? What should employees do in the event that they're facing harassment and discrimination?
Yeah, I mean, and the key is this: as an employee, if you feel you're facing harassment, or as a coworker, or particularly a supervisor who thinks that's happening in the workplace, the three cardinal rules in what you should do is report, report, report.
Let me right? One more time, Jay.
Report, report, report. If the three cardinal rules of real estate are location, 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 then the three cardinal rules with respect to if you're being bullied, if you're being treated unfairly, if you're subject to sexual harassment or other kinds of harassment, you don't have to put up with this. You shouldn't put up with this. And the employer is going to endorse that and follow through on that. You know, and but yeah, you want to put them on notice. So report, report, report.
Yeah, there's multiple reasons to put them on notice. The first and foremost is it needs to stop.
Right.
You know, you can't, as an employee, you can't do nothing, allow the behavior to continue, and expect that that won't affect your ability later on if a lawsuit is brought to collect damages. So you have some responsibility as the employee to raise it to the attention of the employer. Now, in certain circumstances, it's impractical to complain to the employers. For instance, if you're in a situation where there are very few employees, there's only one manager, and the manager is actually the person that you're complaining about, and there is nobody above that manager, then who do you complain to? That can be a situation in which the report, report, report may be less important as filing the complaint with the proper entity, perhaps the EEOC, which is the Federal Division of Human Rights, or the state's Division of Human Rights. Either one of those can help in situations where you're facing discrimination on the basis of sex, age, race, religion.
Right, the protected classification. And folks, the big thing, a very important issue to remember is this, that when you report or when you participate in an investigation and respond truthfully and accurately, all of the harassment discrimination laws also prohibit retaliation.
Right.
So in the example Daniel just gave, if you have a problem with your supervisor and there's nowhere in the chain of command to go, you've got to go laterally. You got to go get an attorney so there can be, you got to go to a state agency or the federal agency. But if you report that, you cannot be subjected to retaliation. Change in work time, change in no promotion, getting discharged and discipline, things of that nature. The law is very, very protective on no retaliation.
And this goes back to a point that we discussed earlier, which is, you know, we were talking about, well, how do I know whether I should report? And let's say you aren't 100% sure, but you're worried about it. It's eating you up. You make a report. It turns out that it's not sexual harassment. You still have those protections that the person who complained about sexual harassment, which ended up to be determined to be an inappropriate practice.
Right. As long as you make a – look, you couldn't fictionally create something to say, you know, Daniel and I have a disagreement. I know a way I can get to him. I'll just create fiction.
Right.
And that's not a good faith report. Then the retaliation or no retaliation doesn't apply to that. But if you make a report, listen – I just don't think I should be treated this way. I don't like those kinds of stories. You know, there's a creep factor with the elevator eyes, the way that, you know, he holds my hand and shaking hands longer than he holds other people's hands. You know, even if the investigation renders that inconclusive with respect to whether that was improper conduct, harassing conduct, that would be protected by the no retaliation.
The complaining is right. Still protected. So yep. We'll get back to this topic in a minute. There's certainly a lot to speak about, but we do have Tommy from Skodak on the line. And Skodak is near and dear to my heart. Good morning, Tommy.
Hi. I stayed in a motel, my wife and I, back in January.
Okay.
Early January. And we got the bill, or we paid with credit card. And when my credit card statement came in, it showed that I got double billed.
Well, let me ask you, how long ago did the statement come in?
It came in about 2 weeks, towards the end of January.
And it didn't. So sometimes, Tommy, they when you run the card initially, they put what's called a deposit down, and that can be a number up to $200-$300, and then later when they get the actual bill, that gets resolved. Are you confident that didn't occur here?
Yeah, because we paid the bill. I mean, I didn't want to pay interest on it, with the credit card. So I paid the bill, and we called the motel, and they looked at it, and they said, if in the end for a while, and then they finally said that they would refund our money.
And did they do that?
We waited and waited and waited and didn't get a check,
okay.
Heard nothing, called back. We talked to another person, And they assured us that the check would be in the mail and we should be receiving it within a week. Well, that was last week. We still haven't got it. We called again, and the person on the other end was, we talked to a manager, and he said he would have to review the case and go back and deal with it. And I kind of feel now I'm getting the runaround.
I think, Tommy, that you're working way too hard. And the reason I say that is that almost every credit card these days allows you to challenge a charge on the card's bill. And they will do all of the work that you're now doing. So what I would recommend that you do is stop messing around with these guys. Go to your credit card company. Explain the entire story, including the fact that multiple people told you that it would be refunded and it wasn't. And let them start doing this work for you. In the event that they never give it back to you, then you probably could take it to small claims court. I suspect unless it was a really nice hotel, it will cost you more to go to small claims court in time and energy and cost than recover.
We're talking $200.
Okay. So, you could do it. And I think you'd probably have a good case, but I would in any situation where you've been overbilled or you want to dispute the amount that you've been charged, go to your credit card company first, because they have people that's what they do, and they do it for you. All you need to do is make a complaint. Some credit cards companies are better at it than others, but generally speaking, they all do. Now, the thing is, they all will tell you that you have to make the report within a certain amount of time. So doing it when you first realize it that the mischarge has been applied is key. Okay, in this case, you had a good faith basis for not doing it, because you talked to the hotel and they said they would correct the problem and they didn't. So that's why I think you should mention that specifically to your own credit card company. What do you think, Jay? Okay. Any other tips for Tommy?
No, I mean, just from a practical point of view, sometimes the hotels and motels are very concerned and interested in getting a good review on Yelp and Trivago and things of that nature, because they'll ask you when you check out, was everything good? You know, this is very important for us. Would you give us a 5-star rating?
Yeah. So if you were to go on to Google and say, I was double charged by this hotel and they haven't refunded my money, and as long as those facts were true, I suspect that you would get a call back within a few minutes.
Yeah.
Or a few days at the most.
Or just let your credit card do it, and then if they call you again, the manager says, listen, I was real happy. I stayed there. I'm willing to stay there again, but I just thought this was going to be cleaned up by now. You know, it's going to change my impression of the motel, whether we'd ever stay there again, and what kind of review we would give it to our friends, colleagues, et cetera.
Right.
Right.
But as long as it's truthful, you're okay.
Yeah, that's the key. Now, we had a situation actually not too long ago where someone was for whatever reason unhappy about their stay at a hotel, and they made a false report on Google that there were bed bugs at the hotel, which severely affected the business, and we were able to get all of that cleaned up. But that was a case where the person had potentially committed defamation or libel because it was written.
Yeah. Okay, so, I will contact my credit card company then.
All right, very good. Thanks, Tom.
Good luck, Tom.
So, Jay, back to, before we get back, we'll give the number here, 518-476-1300. This is the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. We are here to answer your questions. Doesn't have to be on the topic we're talking about. Gervin and Ferlazzo, been practicing here in the Capital District for 25 years. We've got a number of attorneys in the office that practice in a wide variety of areas of the law. If Jay and I can't answer the question, which would be amazing to both Jay and I, we can certainly point you in the right direction. During the week, if you have a call and you don't want to talk about it on the radio, but you do want to talk to one of us, please give us a call at the office, 518-462-0300, or you can email Jay or I. My email is dsr@gervinlaw.com, and Jay is jeg@gervinlaw.com.
And the other thing, Daniel, is that if people have ongoing thoughts about what we talked about today in response to the callers or otherwise, Sal's here every other week, he's a fountain of knowledge. So, just call in next Saturday, and say, hey, talked to Daniel and Jay last week in the wake of that conversation, had some other ideas, other questions, boom. But again, you can email us, you can call us. Some of these things, we often start working for people to call us on Saturdays and help them out on some legal issues. They'll contact us during the week, and we're really happy to do that.
Yeah, and you know what? Don't wait. You know, there's nothing that makes me feel worse than when someone comes into my office with a problem that I could have helped them with if they had come to me sooner. And it's amazing. You know, it's like anything else in your life. It's like the noise coming from the back of your car that you just let go on for a year and a half, 2 years. People allow serious legal problems to get put by the wayside. You know, I'll deal with it later. And then all of a sudden, you pass the statute of limitations, and there's nothing that I can do for you. Even though had you come a few months earlier or a year earlier, you know, that would have been a case that we could have handled.
I'm laughing because I had a nail in one of my tires on the car, and I let it go for a month and a half. So every day, I would have to go to the stewards, because God bless stewards, they had the free air. And I would put 40 pounds of air in, and that would last me to wherever I was driving and back. And then, so I had a lot of coffee at Stewart's. So finally, I got it fixed last Saturday. And they're going, how long was this? I go, it might have been a week or so, and I knew it was since Thanksgiving.
And the same thing happens with these legal issues.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm making the point. So Daniel's right. It was stupid on my behalf, so take care of it up front.
Gideon, will you mark down in the book where Jay told me that I was right?
Right here at 1046.
Thank you, Gideon. All right, number here in the studio, 518-476-1300. So, Jay, you know, one of the things that comes to mind for me, too, is that there are different forms that discrimination and harassment takes, right? The cases are never generally that somebody comes in and says, this person said to me, you know, you're too old to work here. Or we don't like you because of the religion that you practice. Right. Okay. I mean, it doesn't normally happen that way. In severe cases, it does. But in most cases, it's different. It's a pervasive atmosphere where people are hearing hushed conversations, or they've been told about the way that other employees who are similar to them have been treated in the past and are being treated. And that puts them on edge. You know, that can be what's called a hostile work environment. It's not directed. It may not necessarily be directed right at you, but you're affected by it because you are constantly reminded of it. You're hearing about it, and it affects the way that you feel and the way you go about your work. So that these things take all kinds of different forms. But again, if you don't say anything about it, your employer can't fix it. And in some cases, particularly where an employer is good about doing the things that Jay and I have recommended earlier, training, putting a policy in place, letting you know that you can complain. If you fail to complain, you're not then going to be able to seek damages from that employer, where they can show that they provided training, they provided an avenue for you to complain, and you didn't do it. So there's responsibility on both sides of the coin.
Quid pro quo sexual harassment is something for something. Mm. It's the classic ones you read about or see in the movies and the TV shows, where typically a supervisor is saying to a subordinate, you have to engage in some kind of relationship. That's the one strike rule, Daniel. So, you know, the person has not had to report that up front, that it was a problem, a hostile. If they're subject to quid pro quo, that gives rise to a claim right there.
Right.
For the hostile treatment or the, you know, the interference in the workplace, it's typically pervasive. And if you rolled the clock back 30 years ago, pervasive was, you know, regularly. In 2018, pervasive may be more than one bad comment, but it's not a lot more than
right,
one.
Right,
right. You know, when I give the training, I say to folks, okay, look, the society's evolved correctly. So while it should be pervasive, don't go out of here today and said, okay, Gervin just told me I can do one dirty joke a year. That's not true. Right? You don't put yourself in that situation. But I just wanted to make sure that from the quid pro quo point of view, you're subjected to that. You report. You have an action there.
You have an action. Right. Let's go to Brooklyn from Albany. Good morning, Brooklyn.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you,
good
sir?
Good. I'm good. Yourself?
Good. Thank you.
I don't know what made me.
Go ahead. How can we help this morning?
Oh, yeah. I stumbled upon your station and I heard your show and what was going on. I said, gee, that happened to fit me, what's going on in my life right now.
Well, Brooklyn, let me just say this. We definitely want to talk about it. Don't use the names of any people or your employer on the radio, okay?
No question.
But go ahead and ask your question, okay?
Okay. I'm in a union. Right. I'm in a union. I get a job somewhere. I get the best job within that union. I'm working in a job, how should I say this without? Well, I'm working at the job. While I'm working at the job, before I had got to the job, there was a gentleman who had the job before me.
Okay.
And he went to his grave screaming racism. Right? So now I just happened to get the job after him because I looked like him and our personalities were similar. That's how I got the job. The job happened to be a very great job where I was actually getting 2 days of retirement per day, including my pay. This job was very special. I was the only minority in that position during that time period. So now, let's fast forward. The racism happened, and I happen to think I was the foundation that when it happened, the fact that I did what I did, even though I lost a lot of people after me, might have won. So the racism happened. I went through the whole process. I won. 6.5 months later, right, one of the supervisors was friends with the initial person that I filed the suit against. Mm-hmm. So something happened. They laid me off. Again, I was like, you can't lay me, you know, I was arguing, you can't lay me off. So now 6 months go by, and the supervisor and the initial person that I screamed racism to got caught taking a valuable item. So now I said, wow, let me go back and file this again. So I filed it again, and I defended myself, and I lost. I lost everything. I'm like, wow. So now let's fast forward to the day. I decided to just let everything go because I think I might have missed the time bar because it really caused me to lose my mental. You know, I don't know if anyone in the audience ever lost a job before, but when you lose a job, you feel less than a person. You know, it's like you lose your whole self-worth.
You lose your dignity.
It's amazing what it does to you.
Sure.
You know, and then you screaming to everybody, especially when you are, when it's really happening to you, you're a minority, but everybody's saying you can't say that. You can't scream. Anyone, every time we screaming, oh, you playing the black card.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And and
Brooklyn, when you lost your job, it was through the layoff, not through discipline.
That's what they screamed. It was through the layoff.
And under the union contract, you said you're in the union. Is there a recall period that, you know, if things change at the company, you're entitled to recall to the position that they laid you off from?
Yeah, but here is the catch: when they had laid me off,
okay,
I clearly had evidence showing where they called upstairs to show you that I was targeted during this layoff.
Okay.
I was literally targeted during this layoff because as soon as they laid me off, hours later they called back three people and they called back another person from another department.
To that position? To fill the
position? That position, to fill the minority role.
Hmm. And did your union get involved with a grievance?
No, they didn't get involved. They didn't. My union didn't represent me at all because my union was, you know, at that time, my union was representing other people, and if they would have, it didn't represent me.
Okay.
So now, that's where I'm at now. Now I'm trying to get back in the union.
Let me just ask you one question. How long ago was that? That you got laid off and the union didn't challenge anything when others were hired?
About a year. Oh, wow. That was, let me think exactly, because it's not about 18 months ago.
And private sector employer or public sector?
Well, it was a private and public.
Okay. All right.
Both. It was actually two suits against each one of them.
Okay.
But my mistake was, and this is what I call for. Anyone out there, never try to do this yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never try to do this yourself. No matter how smart you think you are.
Yeah.
You know, I just happen to think, never try to do it yourself.
Let me just reinforce what you're saying, Brooklyn. There are so many different areas of the law that an attorney can practice in. And when one of us gets asked to do something in an area that we don't practice in, even as lawyers with years of practice and a legal education, we go to other lawyers who know more than us, and we talk to them first before we do anything, or we get them involved to help us, because that's how complicated the law can be. And for someone to try and navigate it on their own is a recipe for disaster, particularly in cases of discrimination, harassment, personal injury, medical malpractice. These are areas where attorneys will help you generally on what's called a contingency basis.
Well, a couple things. And Daniel's right. And Daniel and Sal do a lot of work in personal injury for our office, and that's kind of contingency, so the individual client's not paying anything up front. Just so you know, Brooklyn, on the discrimination claims, in this country, unless there's a statute or a contract that says even if you win, your attorney's fees are paid by the other side, you pay your attorney's fees. So if we're going to litigate a landlord-tenant dispute, we're going to have to charge you for that even if we win. In discrimination claims, if you succeed against an employer, the employer pays the attorney's fees. So, you know, sometimes there's a combination, there's a hybrid, because it could be hours and hours and hours of work. So the attorneys pursuing that are going to say, I need something. But oftentimes there's a recollection of that if you win the suit. So substantively, these are matters that you do not want to go forward on your own. You want to have assistance to do that because they're complicated. And you're indicating that, Brooklyn. I just wanted to also mention that prevailing party is entitled to the award of attorney's fees.
Right. And then the other thing is, I guess if you're dead set on doing it on your own, you know, you should start by talking to the New York State Division of Human Rights, or the EEOC, who will pick up the ball for you, at least initially.
Right.
They are very strict timelines on doing that. So this goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago with Jay's flat tire that he let go for a month and a half. You don't want to do that when it comes to a claim like this.
No, I went through them. I went through them. But even going through them, this is what I wanted your audience to understand. Hire an attorney. Get a professional.
Yeah. Well, Brooklyn, I think that's valuable advice. And thank you for calling in and talking about your story. And certainly can empathize with you about what it feels like to lose a job, particularly for a reason that is inappropriate, like racial discrimination, sexual discrimination, age discrimination. These are the kinds of things that I think losing a job is one thing. Losing a job for somebody else's improper motives will make you feel even worse.
Yes. All right, gentlemen. Keep up the good work.
All right, Brooklyn.
Well, tune in again. Thanks, Brooklyn. We have about 2 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Jeez, that went fast, Jay.
Well, the other issue, too, is the unions have what's called a duty of fair representation for their members. And that's something that the unions are very protective and concerned about. So regularly they'll get involved. Unfortunately, in Brooklyn's case that he's talking about, it involved four other bargaining unit members. So they've got to figure out a way to still provide representation. And that's why I was asking what the time frame was on that. So,
well, listen, guys, we're about out of time here today. But if you have a question that you didn't get in today, you know, you can listen to us again next Saturday morning, or you can call us at the office, 518-462-0300. Gervin and Filazzo is located at 20 Corporate Woods Boulevard, right off of I-90. We're there Monday through Friday, and a lot of times on the weekends, but the doors are open Monday through Friday, and you can certainly get a hold of us there if you have a question. Also, you can check out our website. It has a lot of information, particularly about personal injury and medical malpractice cases and the different ways that we can help you and some of our successes. That's www.gervinlaw.com. We'll see you back here next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for the Gervin and Filazzo Law Show.
Folks, have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and stay safe.
This is WGDJ Rensselaer and W254DA Albany, the Capital District's Talk Radio on Talk 1300 and 98.7 FM.